Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast. Today would have been Rush Limbaugh's birthday. Happy birthday, L. Rushbo. You might have noticed a bit of a detour around the USA last couple episodes. Oklahoma, Montana, New York professor, California. We're back now, and we are focusing on the volunteer state today with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. This time, special guest, sports broadcaster, Mark Packer. But first, for more information about the Mill Creek View podcast, visit us anywhere you get your podcasts and socials at Mill Creek View, Tennessee. While you're there, please subscribe. Welcome to our People in the News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with sportscaster Mark Packer. Mark Packer, aka Pac-Man or Rico Suave to his friends, is a news personality and was known as the anchor of the 4 p.m. newscast on WVLT. Mark completed his graduation in radio, TV, film from Texas Christian University. Sorry about Georgia. Horned Frogs. The SEC is a buzzsaw. Mark started his broadcasting career since high schooling in 1986. Mark started play-by-play of high school sports football games during a young age. Later, he began hosting Sports Update with Mark Packer. After his graduation, he worked as the weekend sports anchor at KMID-ABC in Midland, Odessa, Texas. After 6 months, he was promoted to sports director. While covering the famed Permian Panthers for four seasons, he met Dee Dee Stanfield and married her. Mark and Dee Dee moved to Knoxville, where he was hired as the weekend sports anchor at WBIR-NBC, where he was the recipient of Best Sportscaster in Knoxville. He and Dee Dee and daughters Hillary, Blakely, and Presley, UT grads, I believe, I'll ask, decided in 2020 that it was time to move away from anchoring the news every day, now doing sports stories and elements around high school football broadcasts and locker room show. Mark, with the skills of more than 3 decades in sports broadcasting, has become a profound figure in sports journalism. Mark has formed his own companies called Pac-Man HD Productions, Pac-Man Sports Productions, Rivalry Thursday, Playoff Friday, The Rivalry Showcase, and The Locker Room Show. Locker Room airs on Sunday nights across the state of Tennessee and covers all around the East Tennessee sports. So who better to chat with about the Cinderella season UT Knoxville Volunteers had and the future of college sports and the implosion of the Tennessee Titans here at season end. Mark, how are you and all those lovely ladies at home? Did I have it right? All three daughters, UT grads?
Two of the three. Our oldest and our youngest UT grads, our middle UT Chattanooga. Everybody's kind of flown the nest and moved out, and life is good right now.
All right. Do they have any interest in sports casting or news?
None at all. Thank goodness. Thank goodness I steered them in different directions.
Okay. Well, I saw pictures. Definitely have the look, but if they don't want it, they don't want it. So on his birthday, do you remember in the wake of his controversial statements regarding Eagles quarterback Donovan McNabb, Rush Limbaugh resign from his position on ESPN's Sunday NFL Countdown pregame show? And just this month, Gary Hahn, a longtime radio host for North Carolina State, has been fired after making a comment about illegal aliens in Texas. USC banned the word field, so did Michigan. Is it like walking on eggshells doing live broadcasts these days?
Oh, boy, we're getting right into it, aren't we?
The 45 minutes goes really fast.
I will say this. Yeah, I've had a timer 12 that you had to be careful about the foot going in the mouth because of the fact that it's just so different now than it used to be. And I'm going to sound like the old man, but I probably am. When I started the television career back in January of 1992 in Midland, Odessa, Texas, we didn't have any social media. We didn't really have cell phones. I mean, only the rich kid had the cell phone. We didn't have Twitter. We didn't have all of these things that you have in the sensitivity. I think because we didn't have all these platforms for people to give their opinions, it just wasn't there. And so phrases that I think that may have been a part of our regular vernacular back then, now, all of a sudden, there's such a heightened sense of sensitivity that you're right. We have to be so very careful now. I think honestly, I don't know where the sensitivity of things that we say started. Jimmy the Greek was one.
I was going to say it was 1988 when Jimmy the Greek was fired by CBS.
Jimmy the Greek. And I'm not going to go there because of the fact that I think you have to be careful about even the things that you say when you tell a story about somebody like Jimmy the Greek.
Wow.
You never know who you're going to offend even telling the story of someone else. So, yeah, you do have to be careful in this day and age.
Yeah. And Drew Brees twice apologized following backlash for comments about kneeling during the national anthem. Troy Aikman last year on Monday Night Football, take the dresses off, he said. He survived that one, but the mob did come for him. So what are your thoughts on all of this without getting yourself into trouble?
Yeah, thank you.
Is it something that we can, the color commentary is not very colorful if they're not allowed to speak their minds.
Did you happen to hear, and I hate to bring somebody's name into it, but in Knoxville, this fall, there was a, and see, here I am doing it myself. I mean, this is what we have to do. We've got to stop and we've got to think about, there was a girl who was a reporter at the University of Tennessee, had been the reporter for a long time. You can look her name up and say her name, but at the same time, I don't want to drag her into this. Somebody had said a statement about that Tennessee was in a football game wearing all black uniforms, and they were encouraging the fans to come and wear their black. And somebody from a ghost Twitter account, a fake Twitter account, don't even know who the guy is. He won't tell you who he is. But he put something on Twitter about that the University of Tennessee was encouraging that fans paint their faces black and go to the game black. And she defended the university essentially and said that, you know, this was not something that the University of Tennessee was promoting, and, you know, do not do this. And because she reacted to this fake Twitter account, whoever runs the fake Twitter account looked back at all of her posts on social media for the last 8-10 years and found that back when she was 16 years old, she had put some things on her social media account that were questionable from a race standpoint. I can't speak whether she meant them or she didn't mean them, but it was about a decade earlier in her life, back when she was 16 years old.
The same thing almost sunk Josh Allen in the before the draft. He had dug back into his 16, 17-year-old self and almost got destroyed. I think he ended up going deep in the first round of the draft because of it, as opposed to first. And look at how
And you know, yeah, and let's be real honest. I don't know that there's a one of us. I mean, the brain's not fully mature at 16 years old. Sorry.
Not even close.
And just seriously. So she was fired by the University of Tennessee. Her dream job, big Tennessee supporter. She was fired because of what she had put on social media about a decade ago. I have my opinion of that. But then there was also the opinion of one of my co-hosts who is black. And I asked him his opinion of it. And he said, I don't care when it was. She said it. She has to go. And so you're kind of like, okay. You dive out of the conversation because now you're playing with your career.
Yeah.
Now you're like, my opinion doesn't matter in that situation. You just stay out of it. You don't even answer the social media account on Twitter about anything because, well, you just steer clear. You stay out of it. I feel sorry for the young lady. I feel sorry for anyone that was offended by it. I just stay out of it.
Yeah, that's all you can really do. So the high school that you were with, that was Friday Night Lights, wasn't it? Doesn't that become famous from the story of the book and the movie of Friday Night Lights?
It was. It's kind of funny. And that's why my career is so much into high school sports. We do high school football in Knoxville on Thursday nights. My production company produced the Friday Night Lights in Nashville for years until we moved my production company over to the Tri-Cities market of Bristol, Johnson City, Kingsport. High school football has kind of been, you know, at the heart. We get steered clear of a lot of this stuff we just talked about, high school football. It's community. It's fun. But yeah, 1992, funny story. I graduated from TCU and then started my career in Midland, Odessa. 1993, Odessa Permian was playing a state playoff game in Lubbock, and they were playing Amarillo High, and then they were meeting at Texas Tech to play halfway between Amarillo and Odessa. And it was a day where it had snowed, the roads were icy, and just like the movie Hoosiers, where you see the video of all the cars going in a caravan to the game, that's how we were all going from Odessa to Lubbock. And we were all doing about 30 miles an hour. And I'm in an old S10 Blazer for the TV station that I worked for, KMID, the ABC affiliate in Midland, Odessa. And so the car starts to slide. TV stations didn't exactly keep the tires up on the car, but it was my fault. So here I started sliding. I slid off the highway. It was one lane each way, rolled the vehicle on the side of the road, out near La Mesa, Texas. Ended up on my roof of the car. I got out, I was fine, and a Permian fan stopped. Said, "A, are you okay?" I said, "Yeah." And then they said, "B, do you need a ride to the game?" Left the car there, grabbed the equipment out of the car, put it in this person's car I didn't know, drove to the game, covered the game with the car left on the side of the road. I'll figure out how to get back after the game was over. But that's how important it was to get to that football game. You just picked up your stuff and you kept on going down the road and went back and picked the car up on Monday. It was just kind of the way it was.
Priorities. Well, it's been a while now that you left Nightly News. Any regrets or thinking of coming back?
No, the well, we're going to get into the story of business, and the business of media has changed so much since back to when we started television years ago. And the way that I'll explain it is that if you let's just say you own a car dealership and you want someone to know that you've got used cars for sale. Back in the 90s, you really only had three places to let people know to advertise that you had cars for sale. And those places back then were just television, newspaper, and radio. That was it. As time has gone on, where social media has come on, you've got Google AdWords searches. There's so many different places. And now you don't just have cable. Okay, now you've got YouTube and you've got Roku and you've got all these different places. To where, if you're going to advertise that you've got cars for sale, you've got to take your advertising budget, and now you've got to diversify it in so many different places. So what has happened is for instance, newspapers are going out of style because nobody needs to read the newspaper. They get all the information that they need right here. So now they try to sell you a membership to read their product on here, and newspapers are going out of business because you got too many places you can get news. I don't need to pay for this anymore. I don't need to pay for news. I got my phone. I've got my information. Local television stations, their advertising budget, their sales that they've sold is now less than it used to be. And so now they pay people less. Funny story, and to me, I think this says it all about just the business. I was hired in 1996 from Midland, Odessa, to the NBC affiliate in Knoxville, Tennessee, as the weekend sports anchor. Bob Kessling, who's the voice of the Vols, was the sports director, and I came in as his weekend sports anchor. I came in at a salary of $40,000. 1996, came in at $40,000. About 3 years ago, the local affiliate here in Knoxville hired a weekend sports anchor for $35,000. So when you do the math of
Inflation adjusted, that's a big hit.
1996 making $40,000, to 2019, 20, making 35,000. And you look at it and you say, is there any picture that tells you about just the business of media more so than that? I can't think of one. And that's the
Well,
reason that I
as
got
an
out of
owner of
business.
two newspapers, the Mill Creek View and the Snohomish View, I can attest you are saying the truth. Absolutely.
It's just an uphill battle. It's an uphill battle. So, I got out of local news and you know, my wife and I decided we would start my own business years ago. Started doing my own shows and things, and then we built our own production unit. And so we do about 20, 25 games for University of Tennessee, for SEC Network and ESPN with my production unit that we've put about $750,000 into. That we do games all over the place, and you know, the business of having to, for ESPN, where they're hemorrhaging and they're laying people off left and right, the days of the 53-foot expando with 50, 60 employees out there, 1099 employees doing a broadcast of the game are a thing of the past. You know, we've got a 28-foot production unit where I have 10, 15 people working for me. It's not quite the same level, but the viewer doesn't know the difference. And if you're talking about the difference of cost of what that costs versus what mine costs, it's night and day. It's not even comparable. So it's just sheer numbers and sheer business.
Yeah. And are you having the same problem out there as we are here in need for high school football officials? It's very prevalent here. Is it
You know
as
what's
much?
here's what's funny. Here's what's funny is that I do high school football games all the time. Years ago, when I was in college at TCU, I was a basketball official. I literally have just signed up. Let me show you something. Let me show you something. I just signed up yesterday that I am about to be a new basketball official in Tennessee.
Oh, wow.
Here's my manual.
All you
Okay,
folks
here's my
have to tune
rule.
into Rumble to see what he's showing.
Here's my rule book. Okay, that's my rule book. I don't know if you can see it, if we're just hearing it, or what we're doing on the podcast, but
On Rumble, you can see it.
okay, there we go. So, I'm opening myself up to ridicule, but the reason that I'm doing this is because there is such a need for basketball and football officials. There is such a need that the younger generation is saying, I'm not going to go out there and get yelled at and chased out to my car.
No.
So I think this is kind of my service becoming a basketball official for TSSAA to do my part to help because it's a big challenge.
That's great. And be careful out there because I just saw on Twitter there was a mob that basically attacked a high school basketball ref, and he was probably a volunteer making nothing, and they took it personal. So, how is Alcoa High School doing?
Oh, straight to Alcoa. Alcoa will continue to win state championships. They just won their eighth in a row. I don't see any time in the near quarter century that someone knocks them off in 3A. They're just kind of a machine. And
They are.
I
They're like the
actually,
modern
I
day of high school football. Yeah.
well, and I'm close with the folks at Alcoa. Great people. Josh Stevens is athletic director, and of course Gary Rankin was head coach there, and he's moved on. Boyd Buchanan and Brian Nix has taken over as head coach. And one of the challenges for those teams that win at that level is that they can't get anybody to play them in non-region. And so I set them up to play Greenville, a 4A power, and we'll do it on TV this next year. I knew Alcoa couldn't get anybody to play them, so I said, you know, here we go. They open actually at Ravenwood, in the Nashville area to start the season, which is a big game for them.
Yeah. So do you agree that these last few years for Tennessee sports have been some of the best teams put together and getting the most national coverage? Or are they just breeding them bigger and better? And what's accounting for it?
I will first off say I have never seen a football program for a school get more free advertising in a year than the Tennessee football program got this fall. When they had College Game Day come to Knoxville twice and then be a part of a game at Georgia a third time, that's advertising that you can't buy. But there was nothing that was like after Tennessee, Alabama, where CBS stayed with it. And they, what, Dixieland Tonight, I guess, is the song where the stadium was just singing. And they stayed with it
Where
for
they
15
stole the
minutes
goalpost and took it out into the streets.
and dumped it in the river. I mean, it was the best advertising Tennessee could ever get. And but I don't know that I've seen a football program go from just what they've been in mediocrity to what they're dealing with now. The basketball program, Rick Barnes resurrected after he got booted out of Texas. Tony Vitello coming in here to Tennessee in baseball and saying, screw everybody in the country. We're going to kick everybody's butt. And I mean, it's a fun time to be a Tennessee sports fan for sure.
And so in all your time for with UT or even since 1899 when they began, we're not that old, I know, but we read about it in the paper. Have you
Close.
ever seen such talent on a Volunteers football team?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I moved here in 96, and you've got to remember the NFL talent that was here in 96, 97, 98. You know, Peyton left after the 97 season, and everybody thought, oh, gosh, well, you know, they're not going to win games. T. Martin's the quarterback now, and it's not Peyton Manning. You look at that team around him. You look at the Cozy Colemans of the world and the Jamal Lewis's and the John Henderson's and the Albert Hainsworths of the world, the Deion Grants in the secondary, Chad Clifton, who had an incredible career with the Green Bay Packers on the offensive line, you know, Peerless Price, Jermaine Copeland. You look at those teams just across the board. They had NFL talent. You know, when Tennessee beat Florida back in 1998, the goalpost came down here in Knoxville. I think T. Martin was 6 of 23. I mean, it was some crazy number. But Al Wilson was the linebacker that forced so many turnovers that night that Tennessee beat you in so many ways, which made you think of the Georgia team of today. When Georgia played TCU the other night, Max Duggan, the quarterback for TCU, couldn't even breathe.
Yeah,
I mean, he couldn't even move. That's what Tennessee had back in 98. I would take that, the 96, 97, or 98 team, even 99, and put them up against this Tennessee team from last year, and I'd take those teams back in the 90s every day of the week.
Yeah, and under Robert Nyland, 1926 to 52, they had an 0.83% winning average. So they have been good. It's kind of a trick question, but they were darn good this year too. And I think Tennessee would have given Georgia a better fight last week, don't you? 31-14 victory over Clemson in the Orange Bowl earned them sixth place ranking in the top AP 25 college football bowl.
Yeah, anybody unfortunately would have given Georgia a better test than what my alma mater did the other night. I said to my wife, we were watching the game, I said, I would love to have seen a healthy Tennessee team, the healthy Tennessee team that played Georgia on grass in the rain. I would love to have seen that team play Georgia inside on a fast surface and just see what happens. Because if anybody was going to play with them, it was either going to be Alabama or Tennessee. It wasn't going to be anybody else in the country that was even going to hold a candle to what that Georgia team has been.
No. And it ended up Georgia, Michigan, TCU, Ohio State, Alabama. Amazing turnaround from unranked number 6 for you guys. Way to go. But looking at the voting, Nick Saban voted Bama number 2, which impacted the close vote. And Butch Jones put Bama at number 5, which kept UT out of top 5. So not nice. Yeah. Former Peyton Manning coach Jones, was it?
Butch Jones had nothing to do with Peyton Manning. Peyton was long gone after Butch Jones got there. But what I don't understand is how TCU could be at number 2. I just don't think it should be a guarantee that just because you play in the national championship game, you're the second best team in the country. Because there's no way after the performance that my alma mater put on that you could say that they would have beaten Alabama or the Ohio State team that lost by 1 point to Georgia or Tennessee. That TCU team should have been around 8 or 9 in the last poll.
I also think there's all kinds of bias. And did Hendon Hooker get the East Coast bias treatment with the Heisman? And is Joe Milton the guy for next year to do it again?
Yeah, I think Joe's the guy. I think that Joe answered a lot of questions in the Orange Bowl. There was a picture on Facebook, social media, that I thought was funny that he and the new quarterback, Nico Emoloeva, I don't say the name correct yet. I haven't got it figured out yet. But Joe was talking to Nico, and Joe was pointing in the indoor facility. He was pointing up to the rafters, and some guy put underneath it said, hey, look, there's a hole I put up in the wall when I overthrew the receiver by 40 yards. And that's what Joe was when he came in as a starting quarterback from Michigan. And this is the same thing he did at Michigan. It's the reason they didn't work at Michigan. But somewhere between getting hurt in the 2021 season and then waiting to the Orange Bowl in 2022, he gained some touch somewhere because he was spectacular in the Orange Bowl.
Yeah.
And he's got to be the guy going into the season. Don't forget Taven Jackson, 4-star kid out of Indiana, who's been on campus. But I think Nico, with what they're paying him in NIL dollars – there's no way you keep him off the field as soon as Joe Milton falters.
And the SEC is so tough. Do you think the new era of NIL will give new teams a fighting chance, or are we looking at dynasties?
No, I think what it's done is I think it's helped programs like Tennessee. I think it hurts those programs like Alabama, who go there and look at Texas A&M. Okay, Texas A&M got the number one recruiting class a year ago. They bought the class. Look, Jimbo Fisher can say we didn't buy the class. Texas A&M didn't buy the class. His boosters bought the class. So technically he was correct, and technically Nick Saban was correct. They both were right when they had their little spat. But a lot of those guys left. They took the money, and then they said, you know what, now I'm going to go to the transfer portal. Walter Nolan, big defensive lineman, was the number one kid in the country, according to ESPN's top 300. He was in Knoxville his senior year. I kind of got in close with the family and the parents, and I learned a lot about the process. And his dad made a comment to me through the process that I'll always remember. He said, Alabama's the only one winning national championships, which, of course, wasn't true. But my son doesn't want to go to Alabama. So at this point, it's simply a matter of who pays us the most money. And that's all that they went off of. I think that the NIL gives programs the opportunity to get in the mix. But my question is what's the longevity of the NIL based off of the ROI from the millionaires and billionaires who say, I'll give you several million dollars now, but my Saturdays better be more fun. I better be able to meet my buddies at a business meeting and laugh at them and say, ha ha, we beat you. Texas A&M puts $20, $25 million into NIL, and then they go 5-7 and they're a dumpster fire. And those boosters say, you got to prove something else to me before I'm going to give you my money again. That's right. So it's a challenge.
Yeah, it's got to pay off. NIL, for those that don't know yet, stands for name, image, likeness. Some of the dollar amounts I've seen are pretty crazy. Maybe because it's so new, they haven't tested the waters yet, but they are throwing some big numbers around. A few years ago, it was McDonald's bags. It would take quite a few more bags now. What's your overall opinion on NIL?
Here's the, I think it's disappointing and sad. I think it may be more disappointing and sad that it is now being approved on the high school level, that the TSSAA in Tennessee has approved that athletes in high school can receive money. And so now that changes things. And that's a whole nother deal, because what'll happen there is your private schools that have country music stars as boosters and supporters, they'll throw money into this thing and go buy championships. And so that creates a challenge. I just think for teams, it's like, how long will it last? Tennessee, I believe, and I'm in with Spire Sports and James Clausen and my friends at Spire Sports. I think they're doing it the right way. They're almost kind of rewarding players for the success that they've had. You come to Tennessee, you do well, you know, you'll be rewarded. The NCAA says that an NIL deal cannot be to get a kid to go to a specific school. Give me a break.
Right.
That's the only way
poaching,
that anybody's
poaching
going
to, will happen.
Well, that's the only way you're going to get the money that it takes to make a difference is for boosters to say, I'll give money to this, but I want the top talent to come to my school. But the contract can't read that a player is going specifically to Texas A&M or to Georgia or to Florida or Tennessee. You just can't say that. So it's going to be interesting going down the road. I'm anxious to see high school. I really am anxious to see high school.
Yeah, for sure. And how did the new coach, Josh Heupel, do it so quickly after the Jeremy Pruitt years? He didn't have NIL yet. He didn't have as much portal. There's like 2,000 kids in there now. How did he do it?
He reminded me a little bit of when Bruce Pearl, the former Tennessee basketball coach, came, that Bruce Pearl was coaching the talent of Buzz Peterson, who was the coach before him, and he was just that good of a coach. I think Josh Heupel's offense, I think he's just that good of a coach. You get a special talent in like Hendon Hooker, who's like a computer up here. And as soon as Hendon Hooker got on the field and he was able to adjust and find those open receivers, it happened overnight. I think he's that good of a coach.
Does he have a portal strategy?
Yeah, his strategy is essentially to wait, and for the most part, now they just got a few players out of the portal: wide receiver out of Oregon, defensive lineman out of Arizona State, offensive lineman from Miami, linebacker BYU, defensive back BYU. And what you see is you see a number of guys leave your program, maybe encouraged to leave; they're not going to play. And then you depth wise can build depth. For the most part, you. Recruiting has changed because now you have to wait until after spring football is over. What players at other universities have gone through spring and then realized it's not looking good for me here? I better go to the transfer portal and get somewhere else. The sad thing is there are more kids in the portal than there are spots to take them.
Yeah.
And a lot of young men are going to the portal believing that the grass is always greener on the other side, and then it doesn't end up being, and they get stuck. So you hope they're getting the right representation. I think Tennessee's here to stay. My question is how long is it going to take to win their own division? Because Georgia is in their own division. And if you can't even win your division, the 12-team playoff is the next thing that Tennessee needs.
Mm. Although you had said something quite wise. Let's see, I had it here somewhere. You don't really need 12 teams because you guys outscored everybody else. Something
it was 204-48.
Yeah,
it was 200. Exactly. It was the top four teams in the SEC, Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, and LSU, outscored their four bowl opponents. If you don't count the Ohio State Georgia semifinal, okay, if you just count the last game for all four, 204-48. That's and it, at that point in time, there's no reason to have a 12-team playoff. Just play four teams in the SEC championship and call that the champ. And of course, it's gotten all kinds of play. It's 700 likes or something crazy like that, which for me is a lot. I mean, I'm not Clay Travis, you know.
Yeah, but I don't think the Big Ten or at this point Big 14 or the Pac 12, 8, whatever's going to be left over, would be all interested in that either. But so sports betting in Tennessee has been legal online and on mobile since about November of 2020. Tennessee Sports Waging Advisory Council was handed regulatory power over the state's sports betting industry in June 2021, a year ago. The SWAC took over the role from the Tennessee Education Lottery. The permitted age for legal online sports betting in Tennessee is 21, kids. Tennessee saw a record $405.3 million in sports gambling wagers in October and $5.9 million in taxes in November, $3.2 billion in 2022, up nearly 50% from 2021. What are your thoughts on this now in our state?
I think it's just a sign of the times of wrecked families, in all honesty. You know, years ago, before online gambling became a thing, I had a so-called friend who told me about sports gambling online, and I started doing some. And it controls your life. I remember back to times where I was down and I was trying to bet my way out of it, and then all of a sudden, your daughter, your child's running around in front of the TV, and you got a football game on, and you get out of the way because this game means something to me. I think it's sad that, all these sites that say, hey, we'll give you $100 free if you bet $5, or you do $200 if you do this. And they're no dummies. It's all about getting the hooks in you. It's not about giving you the bonus. It's getting the hooks in you. And it's pulling you in, and it's taking all your money. What is it they say? They don't have the chandeliers in Vegas, because they financed them. They're paying cash, and they're paying your cash. One of my concerns is that it's so in your face now. I do wonder, it's so much easier to get to athletes now and ask them to shave a point or two. I don't know that we've heard anything about it yet, but these kids at a university, I mean, you can touch and feel them. You can talk to them. And you can't tell me there's not somebody that says, hey, give you $20,000 at the end of the game if you drop a pass. I'm not accusing anybody of anything. I'm just saying there's no way.
It's happened before. It's not, you're not making it up. Yeah.
It's a concern. It's a concern. And I don't know. It's just, it's a concern on so many levels for me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not progress in my opinion either. So you just had Chris Lofton's jersey put up in the rafters there at the Thompson Rowland area. Saturday.
It's going to be Saturday against Kentucky, yeah.
This will be out tomorrow, so we're close. Any lasting memories of Lofton?
Oh, my gosh. That guy was the best shooter I've ever seen in my life. I was covering Tennessee at the time when Chris was playing, and I'll never forget Chris hit a shot over Kevin Durant, ironically against Rick Barnes in Texas, which was – he was standing in, you know, Mr. Haslam's lap essentially at midcourt. Lofton, I've never seen a player who was more automatic when he was 25 feet in, and just a humble kid. I mean, just – he's the kind of kid you were happy for his success. A Kentucky kid that nobody wanted. He came to Tennessee, and he was a Buzz Peterson kid. He was a guy that Buzz Peterson, who never gets any credit for anything. Buzz was a friend of mine. But he was a Buzz Peterson guy. And just an incredible, incredible soft-spoken guy. There's not another player that deserves his number to be hung on the rafters more than that kid who never won a championship.
Yeah, I'm coming to see my first game at the end of the month versus Texas, but I don't think it'll be like the three-pointer that he sank over Kevin Durant. Should be good, though. Kentucky this weekend. Think they can run with them?
Here's my question. Here's my question. I won't bet on it. No, yeah, no betting. Well, because here's a great set. You know, Tennessee beat South Carolina last Saturday, 85-42.
Yes,
beat them by 43 points. I don't know which was worse. Georgia 65-7 over TCU or Tennessee 85-42 over South Carolina. And then South Carolina goes to Rupp and beats Kentucky 71-68. And, you know, the signs being held up for Calipari, you know, go ahead and go to Texas. And they pull the guy, they kick the guy out of Rupp Arena. The guy who cuts my hair, funny story, I think, anyway. Guy who cuts my hair in Knoxville is the biggest Kentucky basketball fan ever. So I sat down yesterday, I guess it was, to get my hair cut.
That's great.
And thank you. And I said, how about your Cats? And he goes, dude, they got to get rid of Calipari. They got to fire him. I don't care what. I'm like, oh, my. It's to that point?
Wow.
He goes, $43 million. Get him out of here. $43 million. But you watch, Kentucky will come to town Saturday and give Tennessee a battle.
Yeah. And I think Ziegler and a healthy James, they're the keys, right?
Yeah, Josiah Jordan James, they're one of the keys. I mean, they've got more depth than I think Rick has had. I mean, he's just got depth all that. Ziegler's not even a starter. You know, Zakai, right. Who's such a great story, you know, sad story. You know, his mom's house burned down up in New York a year or so ago. And they put a GoFundMe out there and said that, you know, they needed $50,000 to help. And then the Tennessee fan base came up with over $300,000. To help her and to help that family.
Amazing. That's awesome.
And he's as humble a kid as there is too. You know, you talk to Zakai. We were at a charity golf tournament this off season and, you know, did an interview with him and I emceed the thing and introed him. And, you know, Zakai just comes over and just a sweet kid. I don't call many guys sweet, but he's just a sweet, sweet guy. Just a good kid.
And so Tennessee Lady Vols basketball, 12-6, 4-0 in the SEC, is on a 5-game winning streak after beating Vanderbilt on the road Sunday, right up the street here. The Lady
Coming
Vols,
around.
Yeah, they're going to face Texas A&M, 5-9, 0-4 on Thursday in Texas. Big games at the end of the month against UConn and LSU, have a chance to add some signature wins to their resume. How do you like their chances?
You know, Kelly is kind of in a no-win situation. She'll always be Kelly Jolly to me. Because I covered her when she was playing for Pat and winning national championships on that three-peat run, 96 through 98-99. Kelly Jolly Harper, obviously. You know, for Holly Warlick, replacing Pat Summitt, is there a more daunting task ever in coaching anywhere to try to replace Pat Summitt? And so the Lady Ball program, it's kind of like Odessa Permian football, you know, back to that. It's got the name of what it used to be, but it's not what it is now. It's not what it used to be. 12-6 for Pat Summitt would have been a horrible year. I think they're coming around, but Lady Vol fans are just going to have to get used to, if you get to Sweet 16, you're good with it. Just don't see those days coming anymore.
Okay, well, we got about five more minutes left, so let's get into the Titans. They pretty much imploded at the end of regular season. They didn't win a game after firing Ron Robinson as general manager. What did you think of that firing? And now they've gone completely scorched earth and fired OC Todd Downing, Carter, Midget, Frazier, four assistants, and their GM. All those replacements will be very hard to find. Is Vrabel the last man standing, the guy to put it together?
I think he's a great coach, and I don't understand in professional sports especially. Look at Sean McVay over with the Rams. Okay, here's a guy that won the Super Bowl a year ago, and then they had all kinds of injuries this year, like the Titans did. Titans had all kinds of injuries too, and then all of a sudden the guy can't coach. All of a sudden he's forgotten how to coach. I mean, less than a year, he's forgotten how to coach. Yeah. It just makes no sense.
It's transactional. What have you done for me lately? No question about it.
I don't know that. I think Malik Willis. Okay, here's a guy that you got him in the third round. A lot of people thought he was going to be a top 10 pick. And he comes in and he doesn't play real well. And then they're like, send him out with the bathwater. You know, quarterbacks used to, years ago, gosh, I'm going to sound like the old guy again. Quarterbacks would come into the league and they would give them time to learn the game. They would give them time to learn the NFL professional game. And then Steve McNair, when he got drafted by the Titans, he didn't start right away. Okay, he sat behind Chris Chandler for a little bit. And they gave him a couple of years to learn. And then when he got in there, he was the guy. Look, I love the fact that Josh Dobbs had some success. But I don't understand the impatience of owners today to say all of a sudden you can't coach. This Tennessee Titans team, they've got a lot of talent. They could come back next year and make a run again.
Is there any truth to the rumors that Aaron Rodgers is coming to the Titans?
Oh, my gosh. That and John Gruden coming to the University of Tennessee. You know, I mean, I don't see that happening. I don't have any knowledge of that. I just think that the Tennessee has got a lot of talent there. I just don't think you make a bunch of changes, which they already have, that don't make any sense to me.
Okay, last question. Tennessee Titans franchise is currently valued at about $3.5 billion, but if a new $2.1 billion stadium proposed to be built mainly with taxpayer funding is approved, the franchise's value is expected to increase by $300 million. Metro Nashville's mayor office announced a deal to renovate or rebuild Nashville's Fairgrounds Speedway to the city's fair board without a final price tag. An analysis showed that the planned funding for a $116.3 million NASCAR project at and the Tennessee Nashville Stars, the local management group who wants to bring an MLB franchise to Middle Tennessee, has added Yankees great Don Mattingly as an advisor. The future of Tennessee sports looks pretty great, doesn't it?
It does. There are a lot of people that will say on the other side, why don't you take all that money and give it to the underprivileged? And, you know, there are those people. We can get political real fast on this. But from a business standpoint, what's the old phrase? You gotta spend money to make money. And I think the strategy in Nashville is just exploding. NASCAR is big, NFL is good, but concerts are huge. So a stadium in Nashville is not just for football. It's for concerts. It's for bringing millions and billions of dollars into Tennessee. So yeah, it's a great time to be a Tennessee fan. I hope that the Tennessee Vols will go over and play a game in that stadium. But I think for me, you've got to spend money to make money. I'm happy that they're doing it. Now they got to take some of the profit, and they do have to go and support some people who really need it. But that's just from where I sit.
That's true. And as a USC alum, I've heard the debate raging for years. Who's better? You're from Texas. We both live in Tennessee. In-N-Out or Whataburger? In-N-Out announced it will be opening a corporate hub in Tennessee.
Whataburger, because I'm partial to taquitos. Taquito sausage, egg taquitos, which there is a Whataburger in the Nashville area. We stumbled across it and we had to stop there. But the sausage egg taquitos with the little hash browns with about four picante sauces on that. Go ahead. If something ever happens and they're putting me to the electric chair, that might be the last meal. So I'd have to go Whataburger. Okay. By the way, I'd like to ask you a question real quick before we go. And this is personal. How do you know Tom Nobles is who got us together?
He's my fraternity brother from the University of Southern California Trojans, who got their asses kicked too in the championship game.
That's how you got us together.
Yes. Well, Pac-Man, thank you for your time. We really appreciate you. Want to have you back, hopefully, during an exciting next season. We are at Absolutely. The end here. Please tell our listeners where they can go to find out more about you, hire your companies, anything you want to tell them.
Sounds good. Well, you can go if you want to see the production unit. And let's say there's somebody that does country music and has a concert. We've done a lot of events in Nashville. Go online to pacmanhd.com, which is pacmanhd.com. There's a video tour of the production unit there. All the information there, pacmanhd.com. And hopefully we'll be over there doing concerts and all that kinds of stuff with our production unit.
All right. Well, I hope to see you at the Vols basketball game against Texas. Thanks again for coming on with us. Have a great night.
Sounds good. Call me. We'll get together.
Welcome to the Steve and Steve segment of our show, where we cover what we just heard. Producer Steve, what did you think of our guest, Mark Packer?
Mark Packer sounds like a really fun guy, and I love the fact that he started his own production company. He goes out, and he saw a need, and he has a staff that go out, they record the... It sounds like they actually do probably live feeds and all that kind of thing during the games, and I love it. He's a business guy as well as a sports fanatic, and he's been able to spin his love for the sports into a business, not only as a talk show host and as a commentator, but now as a standalone business. And he probably doesn't have to deal with nearly the politics that you guys were dealing with, talking about in the very beginning of the show with him.
That's exactly right. He started out as a young guy in the business and has seen all of the skeletons in the closet and decided that he had learned enough and he could set out on his own and do it his way as an entrepreneur and still do what he loves, which is be around the sports, be around the athletes and make a living at it and raise three beautiful daughters and a happy wife at home, everything. So he is a great guy and he is the sportscaster of Eastern Tennessee, Knoxville. So
excellent.
On to the next part. Let's kick this off with a little reminder of how all the gaslighting has twisted the mind of so many people. Clip one, please.
Which political party founded the KKK?
The Republican Party, of course.
Wrong.
Wrong?
The Democrat Party.
Are you serious? For real?
You know which party abolished slavery?
Which party? That was the Democrat Party.
It was actually the Republicans. Republicans were the anti-slavery party established in 1860 with Lincoln.
Abraham Lincoln was a Republican?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Which political party gave African Americans the right to vote?
I'm going to go with the Democrat.
Republican.
Republican. Yeah, well, all right. Okay. Yeah.
The party of Lincoln is the Republican Party. The party that mobilized the Yankees, the Union Army, was the Republicans that emancipated the slaves. You can read it yourself. Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation. It's right there. Schools don't teach it correctly. I'm so tired of having to tell people that the Republican Party was founded for liberty. The leaders of the Democratic Party is the president. And currently that's Joseph Robinette Biden. Listen to him give his opinion on Trump closing flights to COVID pandemic Chinese, saving countless lives.
Coronavirus emanated from China. A national emergency, worldwide alerts. The American people need to have a president who they can trust what he says about it, that he is going to act rashly about it. In moments like this, this is where the credibility of a president is most needed, as he explains what we should and should not do. This is no time for Donald Trump's record of hysterical xenophobia, and fear-mongering.
That was then. This is now. So now let's hear from him now.
Okay, give me a break here. The internet's running slow.
Yep. And everybody's getting a psychedelic trip on your side of the screen. My God.
Here we go. Here we go.
Coronavirus-related travel restrictions are not getting the same criticism as President Trump's travel ban on China. Our own Peter Ducey challenging Press Secretary Jen Psaki about that yesterday.
And just one more about the announcement you made off the top about the travel restrictions. Mm-hmm. When President Trump was imposing travel restrictions in March, specifically on China, then candidate Biden called it xenophobic and fear-mongering. So now President Biden is putting travel restrictions on people coming in from other countries. What word do we use to describe that?
Well, I don't think that's quite a fair articulation. The president has been clear that he felt the Muslim ban was xenophobic. He overturned the Muslim ban. He also, though, has supported, and he himself, even before, or we did, I should say, even before he was inaugurated, steps travel restrictions in order to keep the American people safe.
So what's changed, Steve?
Absolutely. The only difference is he's still promoting the BS that we all know as BS.
That's true. He isn't running for office as a social justice warrior anymore. He's already in office. Let's play clip number four, please.
Across the millennium years is crunch time in this whole agenda, crunch time for the human race. This is the time when this network of interbreeding bloodlines wants to bring in its global fascist structure of a world government to which nation states would be administrative units, of a world central bank and a world currency, a currency that wouldn't be cash, it would be merely electronic, for which there are fundamental implications for human freedom. And also the world army, which is designed to be NATO, expanding and expanding as it is now, of course, to become the fully fledged world army, world police force. And underpinning that little lot is designed to be a microchip population in which we are microchipped with our financial details, our medical details, etc., etc. And that would allow not only electronic tagging, people knowing where we are all the time, it would allow the external manipulation through this electronic means of our mental and emotional processes. This will happen unless the human race wakes up and wakes up fast. And to do that, we need to understand what's really going on. And to let people know that, we've got to stop beating about the bush, stop pulling punches, stop pussyfooting around, keeping information from people, oh my goodness, how will they react, and just say, this is going on, take it or leave it, make of it what you will, but this is what's going on.
1998.
Exactly, 1998, that was then. I heard that, I remember actually when I heard that coming from the BBC, and I thought that guy was crazy. I thought, hey, there's what you call a conspiracy theorist nutcase, probably drinking a little too much. I want to hear what the folks at the World Economic Forum say in their own words. It's a different kind of slavery than civil war, cotton growing southern slavery, but not far off. Check this out. Clip number five.
Now, up till now in history, the humans were so complicated that from a practical perspective, it still made sense to believe in free will. Because nobody could understand you better than you understand yourself. You had this inner realm of desires and thoughts and feelings, which you had privileged access to this inner realm.
Yeah, but that hasn't changed today, right? Like that access
it has
is
changed.
Still...
There is no longer the privileged access now belongs to corporations like Google. They can have access to things happening ultimately inside my body and brain, which I don't know about. There is somebody out there, not just one, all kinds of corporations and governments, that maybe not today, maybe in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, they will have privileged access to what's happening inside me, more privileged than my access. They could understand what is happening in my brain better than I understand it, which means they will never be perfect.
Right, but you will, as a free person, right, like you will have delegated that access or that ability to this corporation or this machine or this...
No, you don't have to give them permission. I mean, in some countries, maybe you have no choice at all. But even in a democracy like the United States, a lot of the information that enables an external entity to hack you, nobody asks you whether you want to give it away or not. Now, at present, most of the data that is being collected on humans is still from the skin outwards. We haven't seen nothing yet. We are still just at the tip of this revolution, because at present, whether it's Google and Facebook and Amazon, or whether it's the government or whatever, they are trying to understand people mainly on the basis of what I search, what I buy, where I go, who I meet. It's all external. The really big revolution, which is coming very quickly, will be when the AI revolution and machine learning and all that, the infotech revolution, meets and merges with the biotech revolution and goes under the skin. When biometric sensors or even external devices, now we are developing the ability, for example, to know the blood pressure of individuals just by looking at them. You don't need to put a sensor on a person. Just by looking at the face, you can tell what is the blood pressure of that individual. And by analyzing tiny movements in the eyes, in the...
Yep. Scary stuff. That's Yuval Harari, Klaus Schwab, who's the founder and chairman of the WEF's World Economic Forum's right-hand man, and chief minion. That's his vision of the future. I don't know about you, producer Steve, but I sure as heck don't vote for that.
No, I don't either.
Under skin implants? No, thank you.
No. Nope.
You agree? We vote no on that?
Vote 100% no. 100% no.
Well, how does a guy come up with this idea and actually think it'll fly? I don't know the mind of a psychopath, but let's hear straight from one. Number five.
I think maybe in a couple of decades when people look back, the thing they will remember from the COVID crisis is this is the moment when everything went digital. And if this was the moment when everything became monitored, that we agreed to be surveyed all the time, not just in authoritarian regimes, but even in democracies. And maybe most importantly at all, this was the moment when surveillance started going under the skin. Because really, we haven't seen anything yet. I think the big process that's happening right now in the world is hacking human beings, the ability to hack humans, to understand deeply what's happening within you, what makes you go. And for that, the most important data is not what you read and who you meet and what you buy. It's what's happening inside your body. So we had these two big revolutions, the computer science revolution or the infotech revolution and the revolution in the biological sciences. And they are still separate, but they are about to merge. They are merging around, I would say, the biometric sensor. It's the thing, it's the gadget, it's the technology that converts biological data into digital data that can be analyzed by computers. And having the ability to really monitor people under the skin, this is the biggest game changer of all.
So, sick. That's what he wants for all of us. Techno slaves, right?
Yep. And Big Pharma is all part of it.
Yep, good point. So he obviously is not smart enough to pull this off by himself. He'd be one of the most forgettable Bond villains of the 40 movies they've made. But here's a guy that must be smart to be the CEO of Pfizer, making millions. Let's hear number seven.
That it's really a fulfillment of a dream that we had together with my leadership team when we started in 19. The first week we met in January of 19, in California, and to set up the goals for the next 5 years. And one of them was by 2023, we will reduce the number of people in the world by 50%. I think today, this dream is becoming a reality.
What? By 2023, as in now, by 50%, as in half?
And who was that?
That's the CEO of Pfizer. Let's follow up with clip number eight, and then we'll talk about it real quick.
Okay, hold on here. Here we go.
Advancing very fast. But can you imagine that in 10 years when we are sitting here, we have an implant in our brains and I can immediately feel, because you all will have implants, I can, and we measure your brain waves, and I can immediately tell you how the people react, or I can feel how the people react to your answers. Is it imaginable?
I think that is imaginable. I think I think you know, you can imagine that. You can imagine, well, you're going to be sort of transplanted into, you know, the internet, virtual, so to speak, to live forever in a digital realm. You know, you can imagine that, you know, you just in your biological incarnation are going to live to be some, you know, very.
I think this is, imagine there is no people, just people in a computer chip.
Yeah. Well, that John Lennon song is a communist song, but that guy, that interviewer sounded pretty afraid, actually, to talk to. Who was he talking to?
Klaus Schwab.
Yeah, I don't know who made this guy king of the universe, but he seems to be in control. And where does the mass media, the propagandists, the Madison Avenue and Hollywood types that think we're idiots and will just sit back and take this crap come in? Well, here's the guy that took over for the much-loved Johnny Carson. Wish him well, miss him, when late night TV was funny and now brainwashing. Clip number 9.
There was Alpha, then Delta, then Omicron next, but this latest variant might be the best. It's XBB.1.5. Another brand of COVID-19 has arrived. It's a new strain, but it isn't the same. Sounds more like Elon Musk.
Okay, all right, that's enough.
God, you get the point. That is
the not funny late night comedy show, Jimmy Fallon.
Exactly, Jimmy Fallon. You named it. You named it.
Okay, so the not too distant future sounds like Aleister Huxley's Brave New World or Orwell's 1984. And tell me again, why are Republican Georgia Governor Brian Kemp going to the Davos World Economic Forum event next week? Why is ex-Maryland Governor Republican Larry Hogan going? Why is ex-Pennsylvania Senator Pat Toomey going? Did we just have an election voicing our opposition to this stuff by electing Republicans? Also, Daryl Issa, Congressman California, Republican, net worth $460 million.
Puppets. Puppets.
Maybe that's why. Follow the money. I don't know. Got to watch these guys like a damn hawk. Fighting for us? Probably no. Stay tuned for my thought of the week. Welcome to my final thought for the week. But before I share, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to Mill Creek View Podcast. Just go to Rumble or Spotify and hit the subscribe button and follow us. And thank you for doing it. Never take for granted what it means to be a volunteer. Peyton Manning on the University of Tennessee. The most inspiring thing is how excited he is to be here. This is the job that he wanted, and this is where he wanted to stay and wants to retire. Those are the key. Those are the kind of people we want here at Tennessee. The people who are all in, Tennessee volunteers. I can tell he is that. Peyton Manning on Butch Jones. I'm not the one to comment on anyone else's program, but if they got time to worry about Tennessee and what we are doing, we must be doing something right. Butch Jones. On January 2nd, 2015, Jones led Tennessee to their first bowl win since 2007 during the 2015 season. Jones's team finally defeated number 19 Georgia after 5 straight losses to the team in their annual rivalry. In most of the first half, the Vols trailed 24-3 until Tennessee came back and put up 28 unanswered points late in the second quarter and all through the third quarter. The Vols won 38-31. To conclude the 2015 season, Jones's Vols defeated the Northwestern Wildcats by a score of 45-6 on January 1st, 2016 in the Outback Bowl. Jeff Beck died suddenly at age 78. Good run. Sudden infection of bacterial meningitis. That can be from immune system crushed from vaccine. Who knows? Often regarded among the greatest of all time, Jeff, an English rock guitarist who rose to prominence with the Yardbirds and afterwards fronted the Jeff Beck Group. Truth, 1968 was my favorite album, his debut. That's it for this episode. Really hope you like it. Thank you, Mark Packer, Go Vols Nation. Until next time, this is your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper. Let's go out with Beck doing Jimi Hendrix. Peace in our time.
Any views or opinions represented on the podcast are personal and belong solely to the creator and do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the creator may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated.